find people who have made up their minds, who are going to be more concerned with advancing their point of view than with listening to arguments about the substance of the trial, the legal arguments, the evidentiary arguments, and more. And minutes ago, Judge Mershon also said that President Trump must appear in court on April 25th. What's the big deal about that? He's going to be appearing in court a lot every day that isn't Wednesday or the weekend. But he has a concurring Supreme Court hearing on April 25th. After the jurors were dismissed for the day, because you don't want to influence them one way or another, but the judge declined a request from Trump's lawyers to take April 25th off the calendar for the trial, so the former president could attend Supreme Court arguments on his claims of presidential immunity in another of his four criminal cases. Now, this is one of those areas where virtually everyone who has commented on this, including Professor John Yoo, leading conservative legal scholar, believes that President Trump is not going to prevail on the Supreme Court declaring complete presidential immunity for anything that he did as President of the United States. The defense lawyer Todd Blanche, who's one of Trump's attorneys for this particular case in New York, said the Trump situation deserved accommodation. It's not very often that you have someone who has multiple criminal indictments at the same time, he added. Yeah, no, it's not. It's completely unprecedented when it's a prominent politician, but the multiple criminal indictments at the same time, that is a serious matter. In any event, Trump will not be attending the Supreme Court on that day because he will be responsible for working with the current hush money case, which is ongoing. Meanwhile, we're going to be joined in just a little while, this hour, by Noah Tishby, who is Israel's former special envoy for combating anti-Semitism and delegitimization. She's been on the show before talking about her New York Times best-selling book, Israel: A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. She was a major television star, a veteran of the Israeli Defense Forces, a major television star in Israel, and now touring the United States. Update on bridge shutdowns. Wow, pro-Palestine protesters have stormed the Brooklyn Bridge and are blocking traffic, with one protester reportedly waving a Hezbollah flag. Isn't that terrific? The incident comes after protesters blocked off the Golden Gate Bridge in California and lanes outside O'Hare Airport in Chicago. Earlier in the day, some protesters were heard shouting, "Death to America," with one protester burning an American flag in New York City. Doesn't that just fill you with a warm and encouraging point of view? More encouraging was Representative Carlos Jimenez of the House of Representatives, Republican from Florida. He was on CNN with Jim Sciutto on the possibility of Israel's response to the latest attack by literally hundreds of drones and missiles. This is Representative Jimenez.
Do you think the U.S. should help Israel carry out such a strike?
I'm not privy to the intelligence on this right now. Where is the nuclear capability of Iran? How close they are? But I'll tell you this. All right, Iran has said, and the Ayatollah has stated time and time again, that he wants to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. I take that seriously. And if I was an Israeli, I think I'd take that seriously too. And so, yeah, if they're going to have a weapon that's going to wipe my, you know, wipe me off the face of the earth, I think I'm going to take some action. So right now, I don't have that intelligence. I'm not going to say go ahead and pull the trigger. But when the time comes, and if the threat is real, Israel is going to have to protect itself.
And he went on to say this.
Look, Iran is the you know, the state that's causing most of the problems in the Middle East. They fund Hezbollah, they fund Hamas. You know, unfortunately, because we're not enforcing some of the sanctions against Iran, they're actually, you know, selling 500% more of their oil and using that money against Israel, against our interests. And so, yeah, I think that that was a very good sign that Arab states in particular took part in shooting down these drones. And it was also a signal to Iran that, hey, you know, we're not with you on this fight, and don't use our airspace and don't try to get us involved. And we're going to shoot down your stuff so that this doesn't escalate, you know, beyond what we have right now, because then it can spill over into our area, into our territory, and involve our country. So, yeah, I thought that was a very good, very good thing.
Okay, that's certainly a reasonable point of view. There's another reasonable point of view. A big new report after speaking to, they claim, at least a dozen very close Trump aides. There's a report on the search for a vice presidential running mate for Donald Trump, including a surprising information that was put forward by one of those rumored possibilities as a Trump running mate, and someone who isn't a Republican. Who is it? We will get to that because it's a fascinating story, and obviously Trump's preoccupation with some of his trials means a choice of a vice presidential running mate could be earlier than usual to help take up some of the campaign slack. We are going to be welcoming Noah Tishbe, Israel's former special envoy for combating anti-Semitism and delegitimization, coming up on The Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show.
On the Michael Medved Show, we are looking forward to speaking with Noah Tishbe about the latest developments and the possibilities for Israel's response to the latest developments. Israel has said, General Halevi, the chief of staff, has said that there will be an Israeli response. But will that be a response that helps quiet things, or will it be a response that needs an escalation of the war and an intensification of the struggle? We will find that out. Meaning, I mentioned before that there was one surprise name in the array of people who President Trump has considered, and even has indicated he is considering, for a vice presidential nomination. And the reason that I think this is so timely right now is there's a lot of conversation beginning today with Trump spending basically all day in the courtroom as they're going through the early stages of jury selection with his hush money trial in New York. And with President Trump being very preoccupied for the rest of the month of April and almost surely for a big chunk of the month of May, with a lot of presence being required in courtrooms, and in fact, to such an extent, it's the idea of a vice presidential nominee or selection to take up some of the slack on the campaign trail. Well, that might be appealing. Certainly appealing with a very positive message is Israel's former special envoy for combating anti-Semitism and delegitimization, Her name is Noah Tishby. She is a successful actress. She is a veteran of the IDF. She is a best-selling author of Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. We talked about this on the air with Noah Tishby. And she has a new book coming out in a couple of weeks called Uncomfortable Conversations with a Jew. It's co-authored with the New York Times bestselling author Emmanuel Oko, and coming out with Simon & Schuster April 30th. Noah, what do you think is the main message that can be sent by the epical events of the weekend? We've been talking about it, how extraordinary it is, the success of Israel and the United States and Britain and Jordan and France getting together and successfully disabling, shooting down, avoiding serious damage from this more than 300 drones and missiles that were sent to devastate Israel.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. So obviously, this was a very successful operation to thwart and hold back and evade the brazen attack by the Islamic Republic of Iran. But what we need to think about moving forward is what kind of appetite does the world have to deal with the real problem here? And the real problem is that Iran has been telling us for a very long time exactly what it is that they want, exactly what it is that they're planning to do, and how and why. Okay, so, and it's very hard a lot of the times for my friends and colleagues in America to actually believe them. So Iran is the biggest sponsor of terrorism, state sponsor of terrorism in the world. When you look at almost every conflict in the world, when you forward, like look back at the tentacles, you will find Iran and jihadism in all its forms. And I'm not sure there's an appetite in the world to actually deal with this problem, but this is something that is not threatening Israel alone. It's not threatening the Jewish people alone, even though it's very specifically state sponsor anti-Semitism as well. It threatens our values and everything that we hold dear. When Iran is saying death to America, death to Israel, it's not hyperbolic. They don't mean it as a figure of speech. That is their game plan. That's the end game. And we need to figure out when has it been a step too far. Is 300 to 500 killer drones and launch missiles and cruise missiles, is that too much? What else needs to happen for the world to actually be like, all right, enough is enough? And I got to tell you, in the Middle East, people are paying very close attention as to what Western world is doing, which is also another reason this stopping this attack was very successful. But we need to think of the future and really figure out how we're going to stop this evil regime that wants to take over the world and create an Arab caliphate, a Muslim caliphate.
So what about the Israeli response to what was sent at them over the weekend? General Halevi has said that there will be a response. He confirmed that today after the meeting of the War Cabinet. What kind of response do you think is appropriate, and what kind of a response do you think is likely?
I don't know exactly. The question is the signature going to be high or low? So everything that Israel and Iran has been doing in the past few years have been covert, have been low signature. Did Israel assassinate? Did the Iranians do this? We're not entirely sure. So that's question number one. I'm not entirely sure what they'll do, but Israel will have to respond to this. And I understand a lot of people in the West and a lot of Western countries are saying, please don't. But Israel will have to respond to this, because I'll tell you what doesn't work in the Middle East. What doesn't work in the Middle East is that you say a red line and then Syria crosses it and America doesn't do anything. When the president said don't and Iran did it right away, that does not work in the Middle East. So some sort of a response is necessary. And it will happen. Obviously nobody wants an escalation. Israel doesn't have imperialistic agenda in the region. Israel just wants to survive. The only country in the region that is destabilizing the entire region and will the world is Iran. So I don't know, but there is going to be a response. I'm following the news in Israel, and my sources over there, they're telling me it might even be imminent, but who knows?
Would it be a potential, do you think, real potential to strike at their nuclear potential?
I would certainly hope so, because if Saturday night or Saturday during the day in America or Sunday, if that didn't convince Western civilizations that Iran should never have a nuclear warfare, like nuclear weapons, I don't know what will.
Noah Tishby, greatly appreciate your commentary and your perspective, and very much looking forward to your upcoming book, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Jew, but not so uncomfortable that you wouldn't want to participate in them. Noah Tishby's information is posted at our website at michaelmedved.com. And what about Robert Kennedy's claim that he was asked to be Trump's running mate? Can you imagine? We'll get to that and more coming up.
The Michael Medved Show, all across America.
It's an honor to talk to you because I think you got the best talk show in the United States.
Thank you. I agree.
This is The Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, breaking news, I just got a, I'm holding my mobile phone, and I just got a text message from Donald Trump. No, really. And the text message says, from Trump, please, 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 ! Will you just answer one question for me? And then if you scroll down, I know what the one question is, which is give me money. Do you care about your country? Do you care about common decency? Do you care about defeating the diabolical forces of the other side, et cetera, et cetera? Send me money, send me money, send me money. And that is what's extraordinary about this piece, a report on the winnowing down of presidential candidates among Trump's keys for VP, can they raise funds? And Michael C. Bender is reporting on the situation by saying that because the Trump campaign has been outraised so monumentally by the Biden campaign, the finances have become a very, very big deal, and they want to find somebody who knows how to raise the money or to help Trump raise the money, where he's also being depleted by spending, I think they've spent $50 million so far on legal bills. In any event, the big news on this vice presidential search is at the X box for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. It says, President Trump calls me an ultra-left radical. I'm so liberal that his emissaries asked me to be his VP. I respectfully declined the offer. I am against President Trump, and President Biden can't win. Judging by his new website, it looks like President Trump knows who actually can beat him. I don't know what that means. Oh, there's audio of President Trump leaving court after the first day of his trial. It didn't go particularly well for him. It sounds like this.
Amazing things happened today. As you know, my son has graduated from high school, and it looks like the judge will not let me go through the graduation of my son, who's worked very, very hard. He's a great student. I'm very proud of the fact that he did so well. And I was looking forward for years to have graduation with his mother and father there. And it looks like the judge isn't going to allow me to escape this scam. It's a scam trial. If you read all of the legal pundits, all of the legal scholars today, there's not one that I see that said this is a case that should be brought or tried. It's a scam. It's a political witch hunt. It continues, and it continues forever. And we're not going to be given a fair trial. It's a very, very sad thing. In addition, as you know, next Thursday, we're before the United States Supreme Court at a very big hearing on immunity. And this is something that we've been waiting for a long time. And the judge, of course, is not going to allow us. He's a very conflicted judge. And he's not going to allow us to go to that. He won't allow me to leave here for a half a day, go to D.C. and go before the United States Supreme Court because he thinks he's superior, I guess, to the Supreme Court. And we got a real problem with this judge. We have a real problem with a lot of things having to do with this trial, including the D.A., because you go right outside and people are being mugged and killed all day long, and he's sitting here all day with about 10 or 12 prosecutors over nothing. Over nothing. Over what people say shouldn't be a trial. So I just want to thank you very much. But that I can't go to my son's graduation, or that I can't go to the United States Supreme Court, that I'm not in Georgia or Florida or North Carolina campaigning like I should be, it's perfect for the radical left Democrats. That's exactly what they want. This is about election interference. That's all it's about. Thank you very much.
Okay, there was President Trump saying farewell to the reporters. I think he's scheduled to be back tomorrow in as the jury selection continues. In any event, the report that I was talking about, as former President Donald Trump sifts through potential running mates, he has peppered some advisors and associates with a direct question. Which Republican could best help him raise money for the rest of the presidential campaign? That inquiry reflects the evolving calculations of Trump's vice presidential search and how his scramble to keep up with President Joe Biden's colossal fundraising totals may be weighing on his mind as he considers his options. But Trump has asked several people about the fundraising prowess of possible running mates, according to three people with direct knowledge of the conversation, signaling a fresh angle in his approach for a running mate. Trump is going to want a team player, and this is going to be about adding value to the ticket, said former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who remains close with Trump and set records for Republican fundraising. It's also going to be about someone who understands the job, who understands the Senate and the House, because he's not going to want to waste 1 minute in office. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like that Kevin McCarthy is on this list. Because if he says he cares about fundraising and somebody who knows his way around the house, Kevin McCarthy was outstanding at fundraising. So is he a possibility? Why not, along with everybody else? I list Robert F. Kennedy Jr., even though he says he already turned them down. After a recent meeting in Mar-a-Lago with former Representative Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii, a Democrat turned independent who has become popular among conservatives, Trump made clear to advisors that she would be on his short list of options. In other cases, Trump has fixated on the whimsical over the practical. He has asked several people about running with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., there you go, saying he is intrigued by the branding possibility of a Trump-Kennedy ticket. Despite his recent attacks on Kennedy and the unlikelihood of such a scenario. Partially it's unlikely because Robert F. Kennedy Jr. doesn't look it. He's in fabulous shape and all of that, but he's 70 years old. And to have a ticket of someone just 8 years younger than Trump, Trump's going to be 78 in June. In any event, then it comes to... It is also unclear among Trump's advisors whether he ultimately intends to give considerable weight to a contender's fundraising ability or whether his recent focus is a consequence of his overall concern about cash. That fixation has permeated both his presidential bid and his costly legal defense in his four criminal cases and further blurred the line between the two. It also suggests that he has been thinking seriously about Marco Rubio, but at least they acknowledge the fact that there is a constitutional problem with that, because Marco Rubio, according to Trump advisors, would have to relocate and get a new home somewhere outside of Florida, because you cannot have an electoral vote going to a president and a vice president representing the same state. And since Trump changed his residency from New York to Florida, which is where Mar-a-Lago is, that's just not going to work. We will be right back with more on the vice presidential hunt, on a new crisis with women, and much more coming up on The Medved Show.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved Show, as if we didn't have enough to worry about, there's something new. And this from the Journal of the American Medical Association, their Health Forum publication. Alcohol consumption in the United States has generally increased over the last 20 years. People have been drinking more and more. And while men still die more often from drinking-related causes than women do, the deaths among women are climbing at a faster rate. The gap is narrowing, said Dr. Bryant Shuey, an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Pittsburgh and the lead author of the new study. These findings underscore how patterns of heavy drinking can translate into serious health consequences. Over the last 10 years, a growing number of American women, and particularly women in middle age, have reported binge drinking. It used to be 18 to 25-year-old males who were most likely to drink or the most likely to binge, said Dr. Aaron White, a superintendent of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and alcoholism. Now binge drinking occurs more among people between the ages of 26 to 34 and is becoming more common among women. Everything's just getting pushed back later, he said. Demographic shifts can also help to explain why women are drinking at higher rates. Dr. Keyes said that women tend to marry and have children at a later age than in previous decades, so they spend more time in what Dr. Keyes calls a high-risk period for heavy drinking. People don't realize the real health consequences these heavy drinking patterns can have. And then there's a bunch of gruesome material of what cirrhosis does to your liver, what alcohol drinking does to your liver. Even as research mounts on the harms of alcohol, many people might struggle to change their habits, Dr. White said. If you've been drinking wine with dinner every night for the last 20 years, just seeing a headline is not going to be enough to make you throw your wine away, he said. I think it's going to be a slow cultural shift that we need. Speaking of a cultural shift, and it's not particularly slow, it's right now. That cultural shift involves the movie Civil War, which was number one at the box office. It has been incredibly successful, plus generally being critically acclaimed. You'll hear our review of Civil War in just a moment. But what's fascinating is they did a an interview with the writer-director of the film, the Brit Alex Garland, and he made a number of comments about his movie. And what he said is, one of the things that really preoccupied me 4 years ago when I began on this project was that it was perfectly obvious there were really good journalists doing good work. But the thing that interested me, and this has been happening for a while, is how little traction those journalists had. If it's a film about checks and balances, one of the biggest checks and balances you have on government is the press. But the press needs to be trusted for that to work. They've been undermined and demonized partly by external forces and internal forces. And then he says, you're saying that the press is meant to be a check on polarization? He says, it's not meant to be, it is. That is the function of the press. And when I say external forces and internal forces undermining journalism, an external force might be the context of social media. All these other voices and the power these voices have. You could also have an external force in the form of an influential politician undermining media. But an internal force would be if large and important news organizations deliberately lean toward bias. And you start preaching to a choir because that's what the choir wants to hear. Then all of the surrounding choirs cease to trust. The number of people have made the comment that it's very hard to see Civil War, which is a truly terrifying film. It's almost assaultive in terms of the quality of the camera work, and because it may feel like you're right in the midst of sometimes brittle and very sadistic conflict. And the sound of bullets being exchanged, including a major battle right at the White House itself. All of this is very impactful. Does this mean that this is a satisfying and enjoyable and uplifting movie to watch? No, not really. But what should you take under consideration before you go out to see Civil War? Listen.
Now it's time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
Acclaimed director Alex Garland has created a horrifying vision of what internal conflict could look like in these United States, with a president, Nick Offerman, barricaded in the White House, while Texas and California are fighting to secede in civil war.
Citizens of America,
the so-called Western forces of Texas and California
have suffered a very great defeat.
Mr. President, do you regret the use of airstrikes against American citizens?
And watching this intensely bloody, frightening film, you never fully understand what they're fighting about or even which side is which in any given scene. But that's part of the point. The view of the war comes through the eyes of a veteran journalist embedded in the midst of the random violence and capably played by Kirsten Dunst. It's rated R for constant views of dead bodies and gaping wounds. 3 stars for the profoundly disturbing Civil War. Yes, it's thought-provoking, but hardly a joyous time at the movies. And again, there are not all movies that are meant to be joyous or uplifting experiences. Speaking of joyous and uplifting experiences, there's a major politician who has now suggested banning all weekend car usage for the sake of meeting proposed emission quotas. Who's taken that position and where? We'll talk to you about it next time on the Medved Show. Also, Senator Tom Cotton, decorated Army veteran, senator from Arkansas, has urged Americans to take matters into our own hands. Regarding what? In terms of stopping pro-Palestinian protesters who are basically trying to disrupt things all over across the country. Right now, demonstrations in Oakland and San Francisco, occupying bridges, airport in Chicago and New York City bridges as well. The Ilhan Berman will be on our show from the National Institute for Public Policy Information. And Ilhan is taking a look at a new strategic concept that is necessary for Israel. And there are several new polls that all show things moving in the presidential estimation, presidential popularity, and the prospects for 2024 and November, but all moving in one direction toward a tie.